The following podcast features topics discussed by geeks or under the supervision of nerds. Accordingly, Geek Life and its producers must insist that no one attempt to recreate or reenact any of the topics or bad impressions performed on this show.
All right, welcome to Geek Life HQ. The H is for Henry, the Q is for question. We got lots of questions because we got another interview. We got an interview.
Yay!
Yay, interview, yay!
And we got an interview with the gentleman who created The Orange Years, the Nickelodeon documentary.
Oh, okay.
That's right. Scott and Adam, the director and producers, and the filmers of this nostalgic walk down pretty much everything that we love. And, I mean, you definitely will hear us geek out.
Dude,
well,
so,
you'll hear me geek out for sure. Because you're out of your drop top at
you,
some point.
You guys... We're talking about it, and I'm like, what the fuck is this? Orange Years? I don't even know what this shit this is. Now I'm going to actually watch the thing.
He's like, I barely watched The Wonder Years, let alone The Orange Years.
But if it's about Nickelodeon, well, dude, that's fucking sweet.
Yeah, it's for anyone that grew up as a Nickelodeon kid, you know, because there are kids that are like Disney kids or you're a Nickelodeon kid, and it goes all the way back to, like, I'm even quoting shit that they, like, don't even remember. You know, so it's like... We're talking about Mr. Wizard.
I will say they did get pretty excited over Justin's geekiness. They were like, "What? Yes,
nice, dude." I think my favorite fucking
yeah,
Nick.
It was pretty cool.
My favorite Nick thing is probably, "Hey, dude."
Yes, and salute your sword.
Yeah.
And
fucking Budnick, man, dude. Yeah. And
oh,
for all you listeners, I actually have a Budnick mullet now. I got it cut when I was in California. So what up?
We'll post some pictures of Matt's awesome mullet for you. So, yeah, stay tuned.
Are you going to come out and salute your shorts?
Yeah, I already did. Yeah. I already did for you, dude.
Yeah.
I thought you were coming, so I hung my shorts outside for you.
All right. Well, guys, take a listen and check it out. And maybe we'll have a little giveaway, too, so you guys can check out the documentary. You never know. So stay tuned. Follow us and like us on all those social media platform shit. And you know the drill.
Geek HQ on everything.
Yep. So geek out. But yeah, enjoy the interview, guys.
So we want to say welcome to the show, Scott and Adam.
Thanks for having us. We're super pumped to be here.
Well, thanks for giving us the time.
Yeah.
Thank you for thanking. Oh, okay.
So yeah, the Orange Years, the Nickelodeon story chronicles the origins and the cultural phenomenon that would become the Nickelodeon Network. And everybody knows that they love Nickelodeon. What we aim to do is find out why people fell in love with Nickelodeon. And so it features who's who of Nickelodeon iconic figures, as well as the creative minds and visionaries of the Nickelodeon Network. So we hope that it's fun and informative and incredibly insightful.
Yeah, and I mean, when we talk about this, you talk about, like, the biggest shows from your childhood, stuff like Hey Dude, Clarissa Explains It All, Salute Your Shorts, Secret World of Alex Mack, Adventures of Pete and Pete, Are You Afraid of the Dark, all that. You can't do that on television. You know, and that's not even scratching the surface of the Nicktoons, where you've got Ren and Stimpy, Rocko's Modern Life, Doug, which is now at the other place, so we won't talk about that anymore, but Rugrats, you know, these are just, like, so symbolic to, you know, I remember the first day Nicktoons came out when I was in sixth grade, you know, it was like, oh my God. So it's a huge deal for at least someone like myself.
First of all, thanks for saying Hey Dude first. I feel like that's a show that always gets overlooked. And you kind of have to be, like, a very specific age to bring up Hey Dude. That's a show that me and Adam, you know, we meant a lot to us. So, yeah, kudos to you for bringing up Hey Dude. But, yeah, I was right there with you. You know, we both were. I can remember the countdown to the Nicktoons.
Yes.
The idea of dropping three cartoons. First of all, getting into the cartoon world. Nickelodeon hadn't done that before. They just played other people's cartoons. So the idea of creating three original cartoons and dropping them all on the same day is nuts. Like, that's just one example of how crazy out of the box Nickelodeon was. But yeah, I mean, those Nicktoons, they changed the world.
And weren't they animated at the studios in Orlando, or
they're kind of all animated all over the place. Like some were co-productions. That's one thing that's amazing is because they were creator-driven projects, which at the time was pretty unheard of. Everything was just big studios making big cartoons for toys that were just commercials for toys. So the fact that like Ren and Stimpy was made by a company called Spumco, which was John Kay and Bob Camp's company, they were allowed to make that themselves, was pretty cool. So yeah, they were kind of produced all over the place, and they allowed the creators to actually be super involved in the animation process.
Yeah, that's amazing. And I actually remember going to Nickelodeon Studios in 1993, and we got to see an episode of Clarissa Explains It All and do the Double Dare stuff and all that. And this is how you make slime. And, you know, everybody wanted to be that one kid that was chosen to get slimed. And, you know, I didn't because I was wearing a Ren and Stimpy shirt. And I'm like, no, you're not going
to get me. Back off.
I'm super jealous of you. Both Adam and I, we never got to go to Nickelodeon Studios as kids. And when we're editing the documentary, we got so many different people to send in their home videos of them at Nickelodeon Studios. So we were kind of getting to live vicariously through them, watching all these vacation tapes of all these people at Nickelodeon Studios. And it just made me bummed out all over again, more bummed out probably even than when I was a little kid that I never got to go. But that's cool that you not only got to go, but you got to watch Clarissa, you know, one of the big shows being filmed.
Yeah, it's funny because I was at a garage sale not too long ago and they had the board game. I didn't even know they had merchandised that. I'm like, that seems like a good pick.
Wow. Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah.
So wanted to ask you guys about this. Looks like you meet a whole ton of people to talk about these shows. But before we get into that, what's your favorite show? It doesn't have to be a live action. It could be a cartoon. What was your favorite Nickelodeon show from back in the day?
So for me, and we alternate back and forth because these were two shows that were really formative and important to our friendship. I love Are You Afraid of the Dark? I think that it is just a phenomenal show. It represented what Nickelodeon was all about, which is like pushing the envelope while not going too far. And I still want to create a Midnight Society.
Nice.
Are you excited for the reboot?
Yeah, totally. Totally. They did a miniseries recently that I watched every year. I do like a lot of people, I do a Shocktober, you know, where it's just like just a deep dive and just watching horror. And so the miniseries for Are You Afraid of Dark was so cool and they did such a good job with it. And so I think that when they, you know, when they do the retelling and we get to have Midnight Society for a new generation, I bet it's going to be amazing.
Yeah, that show holds up super well, too. You know, when you go back and watch it as an adult, other than, you know, some of the fashion choices and some of the music that's in the background, some of the haircuts. But other than that, that show, like I watch that. I have two little kids now and we watch Are You Afraid of the Dark all the time together. And it's crazy. I mean, I guess just being scared shitless as a little kid is a pretty timeless feeling. For me personally, you know, and again, this is incredibly hard. This would have been incredibly hard if we hadn't made the documentary, a hard question to answer. But after we've gotten so close to it and felt the passion from all these creators and lived the ups and downs with them, it makes it even harder. But mine that I have to go to, and it's probably a lot of people say this, at least we've heard a lot of people say this, is The Adventures of Pete and Pete.
Yes.
That's just, it's such a cool show. You know, it's another one that when you watch it now, it holds up. And I think part of it is because when you watch that show, it doesn't really appear to be taking place in any time period. You know, it could be the 50s, it could be the 70s, it could be the 90s. There's really nothing that, like, the way the kids dress isn't like 90s, like when it was filmed. It kind of happened, it looks like it's almost taking place outside of time. It's got a very abstract feel to it. You know, as I look back on it as an adult, one thing that I say is it kind of feels like almost like Wes Anderson and and David Lynch had a baby, and that was Pete and Pete.
Which or like is a Christmas weird. Story, right? It feels a bit like a Christmas story.
I'll agree with that totally. And, you know, Wes Anderson and David Lynch were two filmmakers I'd grow up to really admire a lot. And that show, I think the beauty of it is that it's on the surface level, it's very abstract and weird. You know, you've got a kid that's got a tattoo on, he's an 8-year-old and he's got a tattoo on his arm and nobody knows how he got it. He's got his own superhero. The mom's got a plate in her head. Like, no, it doesn't seem like it's taking place in the real world. But because of that, they were able to tackle issues that kids really do deal with. And it didn't make kids feel uncomfortable because it kind of had this buffer of like, oh, this is taking place in this kind of dream world. You know, like Big Pete going from having a childhood friend to now maybe you're having feelings for that childhood friend, you know, with his relationship with Ellen. And the way they dealt with Little Pete kind of growing up and going from being a little kid to being an adolescent, that's a hard thing to go for, to go through when you're a little kid, you know, having to put those toys away. And when you realize, it's like it happens all of a sudden, you know, 1 year playing with toys and watching cartoons is cool. And the next year, it's something that you're going to get made fun of for. That's a difficult thing. So even though it was this weird, bizarre show, it dealt with things that were very real. And I respect that for him. And there's a segment in there where we show that, I think, perfectly. We found the perfect little segment that shows that. And that was I teared up a couple of times editing that part for sure. And then on top of that, you got all the great musical guests that they had on there. I mean, come on. God. Iggy Pop, Michael Stipe, you know, New York Doll,
right?
He was known as Dad. Yeah, and the fact that not only did they bring in Iggy Pop, but they made him like the squarest, lamest, uptight suburban dad in the world. I thought that was genius, and I didn't get that joke when I was a kid, but now, you know, knowing who Iggy Pop is and seeing that they cast him as that character is really funny. I mean, yeah, the musical guest they had on there was unreal. So, I mean, all of that, that's why I got – and the theme song, I mean, come on. I would drive around – I still drive around and jam that song, you know.
By Polaris, yeah.
Hey, Sandy by Polaris. That's just a good song. Pete and Pete, nostalgia aside, that's – if someone just played me that and I had someone mind-wiped Nickelodeon and Pete and Pete from my brain and was like, what do you think about this song? I'd be like, man, that's a jam. That's a jam.
And that's the thing. We're called Geek Life HQ, so it's probably not going to surprise you that we deep dive into these things. We absolutely love them. Would not shock you to probably hear that I had that Polaris CD.
Awesome.
I know anytime that I see, you know, Artie, the strongest man in the world, you know, it's he plays Cotton on King of the Hill. He was in Carnival, you know.
Halt and Catch Fire.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and it's like, oh my God, it's Artie. I'm like, someone summoned him by releasing tire air. I loved it. I'm a huge Endless Mike fan too. So when I noticed that he was actually the smart talking goon in the movie Sin City, I was like, it's Endless Mike from Pete and Pete.
And so he's not Sam Rockwell, contrary to popular belief. They are two different guys.
I mean, he imparted some very important but misguided information to us all, which is, you know, you hit the go and then you know.
And then you know. What an asshole.
He was my favorite of all of Pete's bullies, better than Open Face and Pit Stain, who was younger Pete's bully. But I loved him. I thought that he was just such an endearing character.
He was, for sure. Yeah, I mean, on top of that, yeah, they got a rogues gallery of all these amazing villains on that show. It was pretty cool.
Steve Buscemi as the crossing guard, right?
Yep.
Yeah, no, those are solid choices. I know Justin was a huge fan of Are You Afraid of the Dark. I honestly love the theme song to that.
I totally love the theme song, but I think I was always partial to Ren and Stimpy and all those songs like Happy Happy Joy Joy and Don't Whiz on the Electric Fence.
Yep, if you wanted to see the Don't Whiz on the Electric Fence episode on SNCC, it was almost always on.
I would think about that. The fact that it's a kid's show and they have a little segment called Don't Whiz on the Electric Fence where someone pees on an electric fence and gets shocked. Like, that's pretty different. That's certainly different than Disney.
Which, by the way, there is absolute truth to that. I have a cousin that my older cousin... My older cousin, who was probably like the closest thing to Bobby Budnick that I've ever met in my life. Like he was Bobby Budnick meets Scott Farkas kind of. And nice. he convinced one of what Scott knows like my entire family and vice versa. Davey convinced Greg when we were out at the ranch in El Campo to whiz on the electric fence. Wait, did he whiz? No. Wait, yes, he did whiz on the electric fence. I think he also convinced him to put his ear near it, and he ended up hitting his head, and that didn't feel good either, I think, for him. So I emerged unscathed. I don't know how I did it, but somehow it happened.
In this world of reboots and Netflix and Hulu and stuff like that, what properties besides Are You Afraid of the Dark do you think would be ripe for a reboot or a continuation, something like that? What do you think we should see again, or what would you ideally like to see again from Nickelodeon?
Ooh, if they rebooted anything, what would we want to see?
And I'm not counting the adult cartoon party by Ren and Stimpy. So,
yeah,
maybe Pete and Pete as adults.
You know, I don't think I would want to see. I think I want to leave Pete and Pete where it is. I don't know if I'd want. I think that kind of ruins the mystery. Those characters need to exist as kids. I don't know if I want to see like them as grownups. You know, for me personally, you know what I would actually want to see? I would want to see Salute Your Shorts get rebooted and have Bobby Budnick, who was just that asshole kid who was always giving the adults grief, that what his life has amounted to is he is now the counselor, and all these young kids are giving him shit, and he has to deal with all the crap that he got from UGG. Because I do think, on a serious note, I think that going to summer camp, that's the perfect way of showcasing what a kid's life is like without adults. That's the perfect way you can have kids kind of being in charge. And it is kind of timeless. So I'd love to see Salute Your Shorts come back. You could have Donkey Lips maybe be like one of the counselors too. I don't know. I'd love to see that.
He was great in Evolution.
He was. Yeah, he's great in everything.
Yeah.
He's great in Terminator 2. Did I imagine that he was in Mac and Me?
He is in Mac and Me. And that's Danny Cooksey, Bobby Budnick. He's in Mac and Me for like 1 second. Like whenever Mac at the very beginning is escaping from, I guess, the like NASA area, there's like this kid that's like, whoa, and like looks out of his car window, and that's Danny Cooksey.
Yeah. I know they were talking about doing a Clarissa Explains It All, which I think is really cool. And I think that would be ripe for, you know, kind of revisiting it. I think those two would be really cool. You know, I agree. I'd say leave the Adventures of Pete and Pete alone. I just don't know that you can recreate that, to be honest, you know. I bet you they could do a good version of 15 now. I would be willing to
be
like a Degrassi, I guess.
Exactly. Exactly. Yep. And
the fact that, you know, the fact that we can say 15 and you're not like, wait, what? The fact that you know what it is so amazing. That show is so bonkers.
Yeah. The guy you're talking to, it's like, I mean, I go back to, you know, Mr. Wizard. We could talk about the Adventures of Spartacus if you want, or the Cities of Gold. So it's you're like deep diving Nickelodeon. That's my jam.
Oh yeah, Cities of Gold. Like that was crazy. Those very early years. Remember Tomorrow People? Both versions?
Yes. Yep.
I never watched the original version, but I watched the second version, which was in like 1991. It had Christian Tessier, who was one of the You Can't Do That on Television kids on it. And I never knew there was an older version until later, and I went back and watched it. But fun fact, that show's created by Roger Price, the same guy that created You Can't Do That on Television. How weird is that? Like, you don't feel like those shows are at all the same. One is like a very weird, almost like Monty Python. Some people say You Can't Do That on Television is like SNL for kids, but I would say it's more like Monty Python for kids.
Yeah, definitely Monty Python. Yeah, and funny story, I was not allowed to watch that. I wasn't allowed to watch MTV or You Can't Do That on Television.
That makes sense.
My compromise was I did get to watch Don't Just Sit There, and that was on for like maybe one or two seasons. And yes, I remember Don't Just Sit There. So, but You Can't Do That on Television was basically the most relevant show of the time for a kid of my age. You know, they're talking about Crocodile Dundee, you know, boys interacting with older girls, like, you know, the slime and Barb's Burgers, like all that. It was such an important show for developing a sense of humor, I think, at that age. I don't know. Yeah. What do you guys usually encounter, I guess, when you've talked to people about this show?
When we talk to people about, you can't do that on television.
Yeah.
I mean, that show, when we got to interview both Abby Haggard, who's the mom on that show, and then also Christine McGlade, who was Moose. That was Moose. Like, yeah. And then we got to talk, not on camera, but Kevin Kubicheski, who was kind of like the older stoner looking kid on that show. And some of the other like directors and of that show. And one thing that we found out is that they, in the beginning, didn't know how big it was, because Nickelodeon, in the beginning, they didn't make their own programming. They were licensing shows from other people, and they were not getting the cream of the crop. Nobody wanted to sell them shows because everybody thought, you know, cable was just a fad. It wasn't a big thing. So they were having to beg for shows, and they found this quirky little local show called You Can't Do That on Television. And when they aired it, that gave their entire network a direction. So when we talked to a lot of the You Can't Do That on Television people, even when it was getting huge and was this big show on Nickelodeon, they didn't really know immediately. It took them a while for them to know that they were huge stars over here. And I think that's why it kept that. It almost felt like an indie show for a long time. It wasn't until the later years when it started being produced in Florida at Nickelodeon Studios that the kids kind of knew, okay, I'm a star.
Yeah, and I mean, everybody talks about it, but that's how we got Alanis Morissette, right?
Yeah, Alanis, she was in a couple of episodes, and I remember that kid Alistair was always picking on her. He was trying to get with her.
Yep. Now, Justin, I know you are probably interested in talking about some of your favorite Nicktoons, seeing as how you have your log hat.
Oh, I absolutely have the log hat somewhere. Nice. I'm just not sure where. But yeah, I guess my question would be, what are like some of your guys' like favorite Nicktoons, as they say? Because, I mean, I was always a fan of the Ren and Stimpy stuff. There's also so many other great shows.
Ooh. Scott, oh, the
I see what you did there with the word tune. So
I yeah. see what you did there.
Yeah. I would, you know, I love the Salute Your Shorts Camp Anawana theme. I think that that's just such a great sing along for everybody. I'm trying to think, a lot of the, you know, Log was amazing. Even the tune, the little jingle to Don't Whiz on the Electric Fence was always fun.
Those songs are great.
Yeah. There's so many realistically. Scott, what about you, man?
Yeah. In terms of Nick, T-U-N-E-S, I do love the Hey Dude theme song.
Yes.
I learned to play, you know, because I play guitar. And so I've just like, while working on this, waiting for things to export and stuff like all the boring stuff of filmmaking where you're just waiting, I'll pick up my guitar and I learned how to play, you know, yeah. Hey Sandy by Polaris and the Hey Dude theme song. I think that's so great. And it's interesting too, that, you know, like a lot that Ren and Stimpy theme song, that's so cool. You know, it's kind of jazzy. That was just made by the people that worked on it. They were like, hey, you play guitar, you play drums. Hey, let's just record a song ourselves. I think that shows the kind of punk rock DIY ethos of that, of Nickelodeon, that it was just the guys that made it were like, hey, let's just do a theme song. Why not? In terms of Nick, T-O-O-N-S, Doug was my favorite. And I feel like Doug always gets kind of like crapped on a little bit because it's like, it's not as edgy and it doesn't have as many sexual innuendos as, you know, Rocko's Modern Life or Ren and Stimpy did, but it's a great show. And I think the fact that it was a cartoon, there's things that, like, you know, when you first start, like, at least like admitting that you're like having a crush on people, that's a weird feeling to go through, from being this little kid who's like, hey, girls are gross, to like, man, she's kind of hot. You know, that's like a weird thing to go through. And I think that show helped because it was a cartoon. It wasn't awkward for kids to watch it, to watch Doug kind of navigate those feelings for Patty. There was like that degree of separation there. So they were able to talk to kids in a way that didn't freak them out, because I think the fact that it was a cartoon made kids okay with it. And I think that, you know, most kids feel like Doug. I like the fact that Doug wasn't a nerd. He wasn't a popular kid. He was somewhere in between. And I feel like that's where like 90% of all kids are. You're not the nerd, but you're also not the Zach Morris that's, you know, has 20 girls fighting over you. So that's for me, I loved Doug. I thought Doug was a cool show. And when we got to meet Jim Jenkins, he was such a sweet, beautiful human being. And it made me love the show even more.
That's great. Doug was the first show that I can recall where I was trying to imitate every voice from it. And I'm like, oh, I can hit most of these. That's pretty cool. And I mean, you have Billy West, who's doing, you know, the voices on that. And he's also doing voices for Ren and Snimpy. So, you know, I like to think that these are what laid the groundwork for later on with our Futuramas. And
oh, totally. Yeah, that was where he got his start, really, in voice acting. And now, yeah, he voice acts like everything.
Yeah, and I mean, we've Scott and I talk about it, and all these animated shows and series, they paved the way for the Rick and Mortys, the Steven Universe, the Gravity Falls, the Adventure Times. Without those, they don't exist. You know, I compare it kind of like Michael Jordan to Kobe Bryant, right? Like, Kobe Bryant was very talented and gifted in his own way, but, you know, he owes everything to Michael Jordan, and he said as much. And so... yeah, I mean, it's so cool to go back and watch them, and they hold up too. You know, they absolutely hold up.
So I guess my next question would be, what brought you guys together to create the documentary about all these Nickelodeon shows and everything and how they were made?
Adam, you want to take that one?
Sure. Yeah. So, you know, Scott and I have known each other since we knew of each other in fourth grade, but then our powers combined in fifth and sixth grade, and so we loved Nickelodeon. And I moved away, my family got a divorce, and eventually Scott's family went through a divorce also. And one of the ways that we became friends and that our friendship stayed together is that we would watch Are You Afraid of the Dark and The Adventures of Pete and Pete. And we would watch SNICK together on the weekends from different houses, you know, just on the phone, talking to each other. So we had worked together as script writers. We had had some success and handed off a couple of scripts. We had tried to get a couple of scripts off the ground by wanting to collaborate with other directors. And there was, you know, there just inevitably were some hiccups. And so we decided that we wanted to take our destiny into our own hands. And we had worked on some mini documentaries together in our jobs. And we decided that a documentary was the most affordable way to make a film. And for some filmmakers, it was the type of filmmaking that we had the most experience with. And so we had some ideas that we had talked about before about other programs and events that we wanted to do. Nickelodeon was involved in, or we wanted Nickelodeon to be one of the focuses. And so we looked at a whiteboard and we kind of kept going back to Nickelodeon. So the next step was that we had to find out whether there was a story there beyond just the Remember Berries, because if we didn't want there to be any empty calories, and it would have been a disservice to the phenomenon that was and is Nickelodeon to just have a couple of faces on there and then go, oh yeah, this is really cool. So we looked, we saw that nobody had done a Nickelodeon documentary, surprisingly. And then we did a lot of research beforehand, and we found out the story of Geraldine Laybourne. And once we found that story, we knew that we had something special and that there was going to be some substance to what we were trying to do. So we talk a lot about how, and we've mentioned it before, that we knew that we loved Nickelodeon. And so then we found out the why of we found Nickelodeon. So that was the inspiration.
Yeah, it was really cool. And like Adam said, the moment we found out about Geraldine Laybourne, we're like, okay, that's the story. And not just Geraldine Laybourne, but her whole team that she assembled. Vanessa Coffey, who was in charge of the Nicktoons. I mean, think about that. And I mean, think about how young Vanessa Coffey was. She was like in her 20s. And she just went to Nickelodeon and was like, hey, I want to be in charge of your cartoon department. And like, okay, go find some stuff. And she's like, all right. Comes back with Doug, Rugrats, and Ren and Stimpy. First try. Wow. Boom. Like, and there's no duds there. You know, it's not like she came back with Rugrats and then two other ones that we forgot. They were all three huge. I mean, we still talk about them right now. You can go to Hot Topic or wherever the kids go these days, and you'll see those shirts. Spencer Gifts, you know, you'll still see those shirts are being sold to this very day. So yeah, I mean, once we knew that that was there, and that's what we really wanted to do, is like, this isn't just the nostalgia talking. It's not just because you watched this when you were a little kid. This is special for a reason, and we wanted to shine a light on all the magic that went on behind the scenes that made these shows stick in your brain for decades.
The thing that strikes me about this too, in thinking about this, most of us are, you know, of a certain age, Generation X, Generation Y, something like that. We are the Nickelodeon generation, I'll call it, because it's what happened after the MTV revolution, because this is what the majority of the people that I know my age gravitated towards. We weren't watching as much MTV, we were watching Nickelodeon. That's where we were getting our content from. Have you run into something similar to that? I don't know if you've seen a correlation with something like that at all, but I remember, you know, maybe my sister, who is a couple years older than me, did not watch Nickelodeon, but watched MTV religiously. So I don't know if there's like an age divide or something like that, because now she's 42. So, but it's one of those things where it's like she missed that cutoff and she wasn't sitting there watching Secret World of Alex Mack with me.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we see that a lot. You know, I have an older brother. And to this very day, the thing that he always gives me crap for is Pinwheel. There was a show that I watched when I was
a little
kid. I
know the theme song. Yeah.
And that thing will, to this very day, if you sing that theme song around him, he'll be like, stop. I hate that. Turn it off. He hated Pinwheel because he was like a grumpy, moody teenager whenever that show came out. And he just despised Pinwheel. So then, yeah, it was so funny whenever he found out that,
Ebenezer. Oh.
Look at you. Deep diver. But yeah, when he found out that we were working on this and he was like, Pinwheel better not be in there, I was like, oh, Pinwheel is in there. And I play the theme song. So when we sat down, I showed him the movie and he's like, oh, still to this very day. And I think that's genius. That's really what they did. You know, because they were owned by the same company. Nickelodeon and MTV were owned by Viacom. And it was basically like, Nickelodeon got you to this point, and then right there when you age out of it, you're going over to MTV, right there. And there was a lot of crossover, right? Like MTV was on Nickelodeon, or I'm sorry, Ren and Stimpy was on MTV and Nickelodeon at the same time. Like it was literally being played on both networks, and it feels kind of like an MTV show. You know, like Ren and Stimpy feels kind of like Beavis and Butthead or Aeon Flux. And those Nicktoons, to me, when I think about them, because I was at that age where I was going back and forth. I was kind of like a daywalker watching. I was still into kid shows, but I was also kind of getting into music and stuff. So I was watching both. Having an older brother, you know, helped. But I can remember I was watching Liquid Television and still watching the Nicktoons. And they felt like they were kind of part of the same big movement. This whole like animation revolution that was going on. You know, they really did. Like there was a show called The Head. There was part of MTV's Oddity, and there was the Max
Brothers Grunt. Yep.
My God, Adam, he brought up the Brothers Grunt.
They're always out on the hunt.
Still, you know, the Brothers Grunt. Think about it. MTV. MTV made, and you know that's a funny thing because both MTV and Nickelodeon had really cool bumpers that were just kind of added to the coolness of the network. You know, like Brothers Grunt was just a little bumper that then became a show, you know, and Nickelodeon did that as well. Pete and Pete was originally just a bumper, just a little like 30-second bumper that then became a show. So you could see the similarities between both networks for sure.
Justin, didn't we talk about Donald Logue as Jimmy the Cab Driver before?
Oh my gosh.
Absolutely. We were watching
a show called Sabotage. Maybe you could help me out. I can't find it anywhere. There's this guy named Cochise, and
it's like the meeting the girl of your dreams and then realizing she's five. It's like, yeah, dude, Jimmy the Cab Driver. Like Scott and I recently were watching a bunch of those, you know, and he's like, yeah. They're on the ice cream. They kids, they're happy. It's so good.
And Toby Huss, that was Audie the Strongest Man in the World.
Toby Huss.
He was on an MTV bumper too. I can't remember the name, but he was kind of like imitating Frank Sinatra. He's like, "You may have killed my father, but you will never kill me." And he kind of sing like waterfalls, waterfalls. Yeah, he would just sing like MTV songs in like a Frank Sinatra crooner voice. But yeah, that there's another example. The same actor was on both networks doing different things.
I almost shit my pants when I saw he was on Seinfeld as Nobody Beats the Wiz guy.
That's oh, wow. Right. That's right.
I didn't even know that. I'm going to have to watch that episode.
Yeah, see, this is, geek life is where you come when you want to deep dive with some geeks and nerds. So,
yeah. You guys have gone the deep, super deep on all the Nickelodeon stuff. I mean, talking about Don't Just Sit There and Ebenezer and
oh my
all
God,
that stuff,
yeah.
Man. It's awesome.
You know, I mean, Nickelodeon was such a huge part of our childhoods growing up, and it's one of those things. We were the generation that was pre-internet. We were raised by television, so to speak. So it's like these were the people that were giving us all of our information. You know, growing up and watching after school Mr. Wizard, and we're going to need another Timmy, you know, on dinosaurs. You know,
oh,
I knew what that was at the time. So,
yes.
You know, I would try those experiments and say, oh, how am I going to make this bottle rocket go or... You know, out of a bottle and some carbonized water.
We're going to need another Timmy. Dude, that I went back when I was in college, and I started college a little bit later than I think most people. And I went to a Blockbuster when that was still a thing. And
I ran a Blockbuster?
Blockbuster. hey, I worked at a Blockbuster also. Like, so we went.
I feel
like,
your pain.
Yeah, it was, I was dating someone and we went and we just rented all of the dinosaur episodes. And so like, whenever I got out of classes, we would just watch them. And I remember watching the, I'm the Baby Gotta Love Me video, music video.
Oh yeah.
Kevin
Clash, the voice of Elmo and Splinter. Yep.
Splinter. Yeah.
He was awesome.
Wizard's a great show. It's kind of another one that gets overlooked a lot because it was different than all the other Nickelodeon shows because it wasn't messy and wild and didn't have any slime on it. But it was kind of – Scott Webb, one of the high-ups at Nickelodeon who created a lot of the bumpers, he told us, yeah, the reason why it fit in, even though it, on the surface level it's a little more PBS-like than their other shows – the reason why it fit in was because they were blowing stuff up and kids just love that. So it did kind of fit the whole irreverent attitude of Nickelodeon at the time because you can blow stuff up with Mr. Wizard. And that show holds up super well when you go back and watch it, except the parts where he shows kids computers. He's like, hey, did you know this computer can talk? And it's like, hello, Bill, good to see. That part doesn't hold up. But all the rest, I mean, blowing stuff up, whether you're doing it in like 1985 or 2020, it's all the same and it's all awesome.
Well, unfortunately, this is the part of the interview where I got to jump off. I'm going to leave you in the capable hands of Mr. Cooper here. And he's going to take it from here because I gotta run. So I want to thank you guys for doing the interview and sharing everything and
thank
talking
you.
About the show.
Thanks for it was wonderful meeting you. So yeah. We'll definitely talk again sometime. And thank you for watching it and for supporting us.
Well, I'm going to have some more questions, I'm sure.
Okay.
I'm sure he'll have lots of questions for you. Yeah, we have an upcoming interview with Kelsey Spheeris.
Yeah.
So I'm really looking forward to it. I'm going to have to check out Scott's upcoming documentary on Gwar because that looks
brilliant.
Entertaining.
Yeah, that one's still being edited. It's still got – that one's not – that's still pretty far on the horizon. But, yeah, that's a pretty cool project for sure.
Justin, you'll have to go and watch Phallus in Wonderland and wait.
They got nominated for a Grammy for that.
As they should.
As they should, yeah.
All right. Well, you guys take care. Thanks for coming on the show.
Sounds good.
Yeah, we've yet to touch on some of the game shows and all that. And I mean, we would be absolutely remiss if we didn't talk about Double Dare. But I mean, you have Legends of the Hidden Temple, Nickelodeon Guts, hosted by Mike O'Malley. You know, you've got Kids Court. You've got Fair Unfair. You know, what are the other ones? I mean, those are kind
Finders Keepers. Did you say Finders Keepers?
Yep.
Get the Picture.
Yep. Yep, Wild and Crazy Kids. What? Wild and Crazy Kids. You know,
that was a good one.
One of my favorites. So, but yeah, I mean, Nick Arcade. That was huge with all these video games that were never seen or heard of again.
I know, and that's too bad because that one is a little bit dated. That's one that is hard to translate because when you go back and watch it with like your kids or something, I mean, the games are just so dated. You know, there's no way around it. But Phil Moore is such a great host. You know, like, I put him up there, like, right there neck and neck with Mark Summers. I wish he had gotten a different show, you know, other than that, because I love Nick Arcade, but it's such a zeitgeist. You had to be watching it back then at the time, because, I mean, it's all about technology, and all those shows were, or all those games that they played, they don't really translate to the modern era.
Yeah, I could see that. I think it's funny too, because you could see like a lot of these people really hit it big from Nickelodeon. You know, like I remember seeing Omar Gooding, and I'm like, oh yeah, he's on Hanging with Mr. Cooper. I'm like, I know him from Wild and Crazy Kids.
Right. Yeah.
But I was that kid, so I had that mind where it was a circumstance where I just wanted to, you know, learn all that. So, but yeah. So interesting enough, talking about Double Dare, Mark Summers and all that, I'm guessing you guys got a chance to talk to him. Do you have any good Double Dare stories?
We got a good one. Yeah, we got a good Double Dare. Sorry, I got a little feedback there. I don't know if I was talking over you. Did you have more to that question?
No, I was just going to ask if otherwise you wanted to take the physical challenge.
No, I mean, there's some great – Mark Summers kind of in a lot of ways becomes like a – one of the hearts of this documentary. People are going to really love the stuff that he says. He's very endearing, and he gives some great, he was so candid and open with his answers, and he gives some great Double Dare behind the scenes stories. And real quick, we got to work with a great animator who, you know, when you got all these interviews, they're great. They're these talking head interviews. You got to keep them alive, you know, and we do that for the majority of the movie by showing B-roll, by showing this archival footage. But for when people tell stories and there's no footage of it, how do you illustrate that? So we used animation, and we worked with a great animator who has a style that fits. That was our thing. It's like, we don't want animation just for the sake of animation. It had to fit. So we worked with a great animator named Jeff Johnson, who has a Spumco, Ren and Stimpy kind of style. And he animates one of Mark Summers' behind the scenes stories. That is one of my favorite parts. I think people are going to really love it. The animation is really cool, and the story that Mark tells is really funny.
That's so cool. That's great. I'm excited about this. I haven't had a chance to watch the whole thing yet, but I've watched the trailer, and obviously I know a lot about Nickelodeon.
Yeah.
Is there anything that is current on Nickelodeon that maybe you or your kid, you mentioned you had kids, anything like that that you're really excited about? Anything that you think kind of carries the torch of the spirit of the original? Or do you think there's nothing that does? That'd be a fair answer as well.
You know, I think that Nickelodeon, sometimes their overall spirit is still there. You can see it, you know, they still are very socially conscious. You see them, you know, like they did a moment of silence for gun violence. I think that's pretty cool that they did that. Other networks maybe might say, oh, kids don't want to think about that. That's too heavy for them. And they did that. So I think they do carry that spirit. You know, there's a show called Octonauts that's on there that my kids love. You know, they're bringing a lot of those shows back. You know, Are You Afraid of the Dark has a mini series. Rugrats is coming back. All that. I think All That is great. One of our producers, Elisa Reyes, was on All That back in the day. And she was one of the original cast members. And she's back on a couple of new episodes. So I watched a couple of the new episodes that have her on it. And it's hilarious. So, yeah, I think they're doing great.
Yeah, yeah. And I would agree. My kids were Nick kids. I mean, we're big Ninja Turtle fans. So when they got Turtles, that was like over the moon. I actually do a separate podcast called Epic Tales from the Sewers all about Ninja Turtles. So,
whoa. Have you had Randall Lobb on there by any chance?
No, but I'm writing that down.
He's the director of the Turtle Power, the definitive history of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And that's a great documentary. Great.
Wonderful movie. I actually have a friend that was in that. That's it's a great movie. That and another good is The Toys That Made Us on Netflix has a fantastic documentary on that. But,
I saw that. Yeah. Well, that's a great point. That first Ninja Turtles series that Nickelodeon had, I thought was great, you know, because I've been a huge – you know, kind of like we're talking about Nickelodeon. I was a huge Turtle fan back in the day. I loved the animated series. I loved the Archie comics that were geared towards kids. And then as I got older, I got into the like Eastman and Laird ones. I loved the movies, all of the movies. The first one was great. Secret of the Ooze. I loved it when I was a little kid. And then the third one where they go back in time. Turtles in Time is one of my favorite Super Nintendo games. So I was like a huge turtle head, a huge shell head. And whenever that series came out, I watched it with my kids. And I was like, wow, it's almost like they took the best of all the different things, like the old movie, the old cartoon, the comic books. Like they said, what works the best out of all the different versions? And let's just take the best of the best and make that. You know, like there were certain elements from the Eastman and Laird cartoon comic books. There were certain elements from the cartoon. There were certain elements from the movies. And I thought it just seemed like they took the best of everything and made something really – I love that. I love that series.
Oh, you nailed it, man. Absolutely. That's literally the reason I started the other podcast, just because I wanted to talk about that. And what we're doing is going through the comics and reading out the stories, and I do some of the voices. And,
oh, wow.
It's something that you can listen to with your kids if you want. You know, it's generally a PG story. We did just have some foul language on another episode where a wonderful stand-up comic named Nora Davis joined us. But we're talking about the newest thing, The Last Ronin.
Yeah. I haven't watched that. I haven't read that yet, but I've been seeing the artwork, and it looks amazing. I love how it's like kind of post-apocalyptic, grim and gritty. Unfortunately, I got spoiled because I didn't know what I was – I clicked on a link I shouldn't have because I didn't know. And I was like, ah, dang it. But yeah, that's looks wonderful.
It's all good. And it's owned by Nickelodeon. So that's how we tie it back in our conversation,
John. There we go. We weren't getting off topic. We brought it all back. And I know you meant that from the start. So yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah, exactly. I am just so excited that we got to talk about like Salute Your Shorts, Hey Dude, which was absolutely one of my favorite shows ever.
Me too.
One of my favorite theme songs. I hope that Danny got more work after that because I could never, he was the best guy. And I'm like, what the heck? Ted is such a jerk, you know? But, like a lot of these people, I just hope that you got to see them and I hope that they're doing awesome. You know, why is she not in more things?
I know.
You're so good.
She's still working a lot. She's getting a lot of work, doing a lot of amazing things off Broadway, on TV, everything. And it was really cool to get to interview everybody, and everybody was doing really well. You know, there are people that are still acting, and there are people that are not, and everybody seemed to be really loving where their life went, and really they loved talking about Nickelodeon. They had nothing but positive things to say, even though we always prefaced, hey, this is not a documentary made by Nickelodeon, so you can say whatever you want. If it's good, it's bad, it doesn't matter. And they always said really good things.
Very different than Disney.
Very different than Disney. Yeah.
Well, I'm excited. With that, where can folks find it? Where can folks find you? And when's it coming out? All those kind of things.
Yeah. So it's coming out November 17th. You can get a digital copy on iTunes or Amazon. And if you want a physical copy, you can get that on Amazon or Target.com. It's on DVD and Blu-ray. And you can find us on all the social media networks. If you just at the Orange Ears, you can find us. We're going to be doing some pretty cool giveaways now that the movie's coming out. Even after the movie's out, we're going to continue to do some cool giveaways. We were constantly getting cool Nickelodeon merchandise and getting it signed by all these people. So we're going to be doing some cool giveaways for people that buy the movie. So it's not over.
How do I get in on that?
Yeah. And Instagram is our main one. Okay. So if you follow us on Instagram, you know, you'll for sure see all these cool giveaways we're going to be doing.
I want to thank you both, Adam and Scott, for being on. I know, I tend to take over these things, from Justin because I get so excited about them, but, I want to thank you for coming on and geeking out with us on Geek Life HQ.
Thank you so much for having us. We appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks for the opportunity. This was awesome.